Sit back, relax, and take a ride with us on the Gunblog Variety Cast, episode 24. I'm your host, Sean, from NC Gunblog, and with me today is Adam from Guns, Cars, Tech Blog. How are you doing, Adam?
My extended experiment in sleep deprivation is continuing.
Yeah, the listeners don't know, but we started this a little bit late because there was a little bit of a meltdown situation going on, wasn't
actually,
there?
Actually, there was a double meltdown. So my three-year-old was screaming because he didn't want to go to sleep. And then as soon as I got him settled down, he didn't want mommy. He just wanted daddy. And as soon as I got him settled down, then the baby started screaming because he hadn't eaten in 5 hours.
Oh.
And, you know, I think I may have mentioned this before, but he goes from zero to hearing protection required like that.
Oh, my father swears up and down that eventually it is all worth it.
I believe it.
I don't think he's saying that just to make me feel better about it.
Yeah.
Well, let's start with the Tactical Dog and Fitness Report. 36.4 dog walkie miles. And I had to scrub off all the flying discs. There was so much rain in the last week, it turned the side yard into a giant muddy sponge.
Oh, that's always fun.
Yeah, and there wasn't a whole lot of flying disc time as a result, but the time there was, I ended up with these frisbees that look like mud bees.
Hmm. So I live in a very shaded area. So if it rains, my backyard is like completely mud for like 3 or 4 days.
Mm.
So Tactical Dog had a weigh-in last week and mm-hmm. she's down to 73 pounds.
Ooh.
Yeah, she was, I think at her height, she was 90. I think when we started doing this podcast, she was 87 or 88. And now she's down to 73. She's still got about 10 pounds to go. Really about 20 pounds to go to where she would be like in her at her ideal weight. But at 63 pounds, she would be pretty healthy.
Oh.
Pretty excited about that. But me, I actually injured myself last week, so I didn't get to do much running. Sean, ask me how I injured myself.
Running?
No. Bending over to let Tactical Dog out of her crate. Something I do every morning, but I bent over and I pulled something in between my shoulder blades. I have no idea how that happened.
Wow.
Welcome to your mid-30s.
My mid-30s was 10 years ago.
I know.
I'm going to be really super careful letting my dog out of the crate for the next week or so. Then I'll forget and I'll hurt myself. Great. Well, while I was recording Baron's segment for the week, he said he just read this really great book. And I said, well, tell me about it.
This is the Baron. Occasionally, I like to disconnect from the internet and relax with a good book. Well, I found a really good one. The Martian by Andy Weir. It's a story of survival against all odds. While based in space, every last bit of this book was done with a focus on being grounded in reality. The only part of this that is fiction is the fact that we haven't gone to Mars yet. It was actually reviewed by members of the aerospace community for accuracy, and then, to put the icing on the cake, it was all laid out in a manner that anyone can enjoy, and the main character is someone who we can all love. The Martian is available on paperback for $9, the hardcover for $16, and available on Kindle for $8. Seriously, pick it up. If you don't enjoy it, there's something wrong with you in the same way there's something wrong with you if you hate guns and explosives.
With a recommendation like that, I added it to my Amazon wish list immediately. And now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Aaron Paulette. Today, Aaron's going to talk about OPSEC. Aaron, you've frequently complained about the Doomsday Preppers. Why don't you like that show?
I have many reasons for not liking it, but the main reason, other than it being scripted sensationalistic dreck, mind you, is that it's a textbook example of not observing OPSEC.
OPSEC?
OPSEC stands for Operational Security. It's a military term, and it's a fancy way of saying, don't tell everyone your secrets, such as going on nationwide television where everyone can see your name, your face, the town you live in, what your house looks like, what your preps are. These are all bad ideas.
Well, why are these bad ideas?
Well, put simply, in a disaster scenario, your first priority is always to yourself and to your family. If everyone in the neighborhood knows that you prep, then they are likely to show up wanting a handout. Now, I'm not saying don't help your neighbors. That's up to you and your conscience, and I can think of several scenarios where helping a neighbor through a disaster with my own supplies might be a good idea. What I am saying is that it should be your choice and not a case of several families showing up at your doorstep and demanding that you share with them or else. Or even worse, just deciding to take without asking. There's a Dilbert cartoon from 2011 that handily sums this up.
Yeah, I looked at that. There's an old joke. If you have a year's worth of food and I have an AK-47, in a disaster situation, I have a year's worth of food and an AK-47.
Well, that's pretty fair.
But you have a prepping blog. How's that any different?
First of all, I don't blog under my real name, nor do I have a picture of my face on it. I'm sorry to disappoint listeners, but the avatar on my blog is exactly that. Second, I don't advertise where I live. The most you'll ever get from my blog is a city and a state, and I don't actually live in the city listed in my profile. Third, I don't share everything with you. I'm only showing my personal preps, not those for my family. And finally, as much as it pains my ego to say, I am basically a nobody. The odds of somebody reading my blog, figuring out who I am and where I live, and then being able to find me in a disaster is pretty low. And this is a stark contrast to the doomsday preppers, where a few minutes with Google can give me their addresses and pictures of their house.
Well, it sounds like you're saying the best way to preserve operational security is not tell anyone at all that you're a prepper.
In many ways, that is true. But there are still some good reasons why you should let trusted individuals, and that's the key phrase, in on your plans. And I'm going to cover those reasons in detail in next week's segment.
All right, Aaron. It's good to talk to you. See you again next week.
See you next week.
If you'd like to read more from Aaron, check out her blog, lurkingrhythmically.blogspot.com.
Man, I suck at OPSEC. I want to put up pictures of everything.
Yeah.
I put a remote start car alarm in my truck a couple of months ago. And it was everything that I could do not to take pictures of exactly where I put the shock sensor, exactly where I put the brain, exactly where I put the siren. Oh, it was really hard.
Yeah. I struggle with that myself. You know, when I do the walking, it's mapped so my friends can see it, but I don't post it to Facebook anymore. But, you know, it's not going to take anybody any difficulty to find my house. I mean, seriously. But still, you know, I don't tell people when I leave town. But that really limits you. You want to put up that picture of you and your wife at Niagara Falls.
Right.
And I've got a lot of people who are Facebook friends who are not close friends. So I have absolutely no clue if some of these people have decided to be friends just so that they can, you know, stalk me. Not that I'm likely to be, you know, a useful person to cyberstalk, but hey, you know, maybe one day. Well, felons behaving badly. Raleigh man charged with attempted murder in domestic violence case. Dateline Raleigh. Suspect was facing attempted murder and assault charges Monday after a weekend stabbing that police classified as a domestic violence case. Suspect, 36, was arrested at his home at 1108 Savannah Drive.
Stop by and say hi.
About 8:30 Saturday morning, records showed. In an arrest warrant, police charged that suspect tried to kill victim by stabbing her multiple times with two large kitchen knives.
Gun death.
Suspect was held over the weekend without bond, which is standard practice in domestic violence cases. He was accused of assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill, inflicting serious injury, along with the attempted murder count. Suspect was arrested in October 2011 by state insurance investigators who said they were breaking up a scheme to stage car accidents to get insurance money. He was convicted of insurance fraud that December and served 16 months in prison.
Surely these were just two small mistakes in an otherwise glorious career as a choir boy helping grandmothers get groceries out of their cars.
Well, let's see. Possess with intent to sell Schedule 2, 1029-1995, felon class H. Drug paraphernalia used possess 11-25-95 misdemeanor class 1. Possess with intent to sell schedule 2 again 10-23-97 felon class H. obtain property by false pretenses, cheats services, 12-10-99, 12-24-99, and 1-5-2000, all three felon class H, uttering forged papers, 2-3-2000, felon class I, insurance fraud, 7-14-2010, felon class H, and insurance fraud, 10-2-2010, felon class H.
I would like to point out that this guy had 5 felonies before his 21st birthday.
I got nothing. But you know, it's a really good thing that he didn't have access to any weapons because he was not allowed to have a gun.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like there's a block of kitchen knives in every single house in the nation.
Right.
Well, this week in Foreign Policy for Grownups, Nikki weighs into that controversial topic. Should Obama have gone to Saudi King Abdullah's funeral? Nikki, Saudi Arabia's King Abdullah just died recently. There's been a lot of debate as to whether Barack Obama should or should not have attended his funeral. What are your thoughts?
I think it was not a mistake to attend. Barack Obama did, in fact, attend. He attended the funeral. He was initially going to remain on his trip to India and then send Vice President Joe Biden to the funeral, but ultimately decided it was probably a good idea to attend the event.
Was it a mistake to go?
Well, that really depends on what you want to accomplish with your foreign policy. What kind of message do you want to send? Do you want to show that you're a staunch ally of a powerful nation in the oil-rich Middle East that has, believe it or not, proven itself to be an ally in the war against Islamic terrorism? Or do you want to show the world that you disapprove of a said nation's domestic policies, which leave a lot to be desired in the human rights arena? What kind of message do you want to send? That said, Abdullah, after he ascended in 2005, did ignite the momentum for some human rights reforms in Saudi Arabia. He did quite a bit for women's rights, including the promotion of higher education opportunities for women, scholarships, opportunities to study abroad, facilitating the entry of women into the workforce, and announcing that women will be able to run and participate in municipal elections later in 2015. Also, he took the symbolically important step in 2013 to appoint 30 women to Saudi Arabia's Shura Council, an advisory body that makes recommendations to the cabinet. So he did promote some women's rights. Also, Saudi Arabia's treatment of its 9 million migrant workers improved under Abdullah as well. His new regulations were passed, allowing some workers to change employers without permission and creating other regulations to protect migrant workers from violence. I mean, can you imagine wanting another job and not being able to get it because, oh, you have to get permission from the government? Crazy, right?
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. So that said, I mean, women are still second-class citizens in Saudi Arabia. They're not allowed to drive, they're not allowed to travel, marry, or go to college without permission from a male guardian, somebody like a father or a brother or a husband, somebody like that. And migrant workers' rights continue to be violated by violent authorities. They continue to be deported, mass arrested, you name it. So King Abdullah's human rights record is definitely mixed, and Saudi's not exactly the kind of friend we want in a nation. Frankly, its extremist Islamic ideology has bred terrorists and supported radical Islamist groups. They beheaded more than 20 people last year, something like 30, I believe. Even talk of atheism in Saudi Arabia is cause for charges of terrorism. While they pretty much birthed the Al-Qaeda terrorists that attacked America on 9/11 and tolerated their presence there.
Well, even you said this. This isn't really a kind of friend we want, is it?
No, it's not. But that said, there's a difference between a friend and an ally. The rampant Wahhabist ideology blew up in the Saudi monarchy's face, and the Al-Qaeda eventually turned against them. So I was reading an article by a guy named Michael Makovsky. He's the chief executive of the Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs. And he writes that Saudi Arabia financially supported the Hashemite monarchy in Jordan, another long-standing but rather unsupported ally of the United States. He's been helping support a weak government in Yemen, although that doesn't appear to have been sufficient considering the recent crash of the Yemeni regime.
Yeah.
Well, Well, they tried. And additionally, Saudi Arabia is an arch enemy of the radical Shiite regime in Iran and its proxies in Syria and Lebanon. The Saudis helped undercut Iran's economy and, along with other regional allies, share the stated U.S. position of preventing a nuclear Iran by all means necessary. They've done a lot of good things. They may not be pals, but they certainly are allies. So, to go back to the original question about whether it was a mistake to drop everything, cut his India trip short, and fly to Abdullah's funeral, well, I have to say, I think it was the right thing to do. I've seen a lot of criticism of him on social media and in comments on news stories. Oh, yeah, you know, he didn't attend the Paris marches, but he ran over to Saudi Arabia for Abdullah's funeral. Well, you know what? Saudi Arabia is a major oil exporter, it's a major power in the Middle East, and it is an ally in our continued battle against Islamic terrorism. They may not be our pals, they may not be our buddies, they may not be advanced in the human rights arena, I got it. But they are critical. They're critical on the world stage, and if the leader of the lone world superpower had not shown up to his funeral, I think it would have dealt a huge blow to that alliance and to our reputation. So that's what I think.
All right, Nikki. It was good to talk to you. I'll see you again next week.
You bet. Take care.
Nikki blogs at thelibertyzone.com. Strange laws. Wanted to talk this week about the North Carolina Concealed Handgun Permit Database. Like many other states, North Carolina originally left its concealed handgun database as a public record. I suspect, and I've never been told this, but I suspect the people who wrote the law would have made it a non-public record to begin with, except there were a lot of those poison pills thrown in, you know, can't carry in a restaurant, can't carry here, can't carry there, try to make it as difficult as possible. And I suspect that those who really wanted to kill concealed handguns in North Carolina back in 95 left it as an open record just as a, now everybody's going to know who you are. But it never really got any traction. You know, the newspapers never got a hold of it. They never started publishing it. So it's a useful networking tool, right? If you're building a membership organization on firearms, one of the best places to start is the Concealed Handgun Permit Database.
Right. Ours was closed in 2012, but it was originally... We tried to close it in 2008 and 2010, but we couldn't because the politicians realized that they then wouldn't be able to mine the database for, you know, Second Amendment voters.
That's exactly correct. Well, our friends at WRAL, I believe it was, decided it would be a lot of fun to take the database and sort of redact it. Well, we won't put the number of the house nor the name of the person, but if you type in any street in the counties that they served, it would tell you how many people had concealed handgun permits on that. That really pissed a lot of people off. So that gave us the push to get the law passed to close it. Well, the last time the Concealed Handgun Permit Database was open, the last day of September, the last working day of September, was the 29th. I asked for my final copy, and I would get these, you know, I got copies of the database every 3 months, you know, so I got like a quarterly update. I am, you know, since I work with Grassroots North Carolina, I was the guy that would say, all right, here's the database. We have this many concealed handgun permits in North Carolina. Well, the very last day, there were 375,628 active concealed handgun permits. Well, I've been sending emails to the people who used to send me the database. It was the North Carolina Department of Justice. I kept saying, hey, you used to have this report. Once a year, you'd post something that said, this is how many permits there are in each county. This is how many people have been, you know, revoked, that sort of thing. What happened to that? It's not on your website anymore. And I never get an answer. Well, finally, about a week ago, I sent an email to the same person saying, I want to know how many concealed handgun permits there are. She says, oh, Department of Justice doesn't do that anymore. SBI, State Bureau of Investigation. She replies to me and says, look, we don't handle this anymore. Email this person here. So I emailed her. She replies to me saying, I'm copying this email to somebody else asking that person to help you. I go a week, I don't hear an answer. Well, this morning I sent another email. I said, hey, how many concealed handgun permits are there in North Carolina? This person responds, I've sent this to somebody else, the person who can actually help you. Thinking, oh, great. Well, about 45 minutes later, I get another email from this person it eventually got to. Dear Mr. Sorrentino, the current number of concealed handgun permits in North Carolina that are active is 426,610, which is an increase of 50,982 permits, active permits. That's 13.57% increase.
What happened?
Nothing. How do these things spread? It's not like they're advertised on television and billboards as you drive to work. No, I get a concealed handgun permit and I tell two friends and they tell two friends and so on, right?
Funny you should mention that. I actually had like a 30-minute conversation in the hallway with a new hire today about how to get his carry permit.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never met the guy before.
Uh-huh. And see, I live right near an apartment complex and I got stopped by one of the girls that lives in the apartment complex. Excuse me. How do you get a concealed handgun permit? Well, I'm the white guy that lives in an all-black neighborhood. And apparently it's not entirely a secret that I carry a gun. So they all assumed I was a cop.
Oh, okay.
And she was having a bad time with a boyfriend. You know, a former boyfriend was stalking her and she wanted to get a concealed handgun permit. I'm like, well, here's how you do it. Absolutely. Protect yourself. And that's what happens. As more people get them, we're getting into not just, you know, the first 10 people who say this is a great idea and we've known about this for years and we want to carry, but now it's like, you know, Susie soccer mom who carries because, you know, her husband has a concealed handgun permit and her friend has one and, you know, all the girls at, you know, the weekend coffee thing that they do, well, they talked about it and a couple of them got it. And it's average people, and it spreads like wildfire at that point. So, I mean, this is some really good news.
That's fantastic.
So, those people who are telling you, oh, we're just selling more guns to the same people, yeah.
No.
Where are we getting 500,000 concealed handgun permits in North Carolina? Not a very big state. If only it's the same people buying their 13th and 14th gun. Come on now. Well, in our Al Arma segment this week, Miguel reminds us that just because someone is wearing a uniform doesn't mean they really are police officers. Hey, Miguel, how are you doing this week?
Doing great, sir. How about yourself?
Doing fine. What do you got going on this week?
I don't know if you saw on the news last week that the Belgian police captured a terrorist cell. And one of the things they found among the belongings was police uniforms. Apparently, they wanted to dress as police officers. And before they do the attack, I guess, you know, give them an edge to get closer to people and whatnot. And on that one, we had a beautiful blog post by Greg Elifritz, Active Response Training blog, talking about this event. And one of the points he makes, you know, is that we have to look for odd behavior, behavior that doesn't fit what we're seeing.
All right. What kind of odd behavior are we talking here?
Every profession, everybody's got their own body language. It's specific. A football player doesn't move the same way as a Marine moves. Doesn't move and act as without words. I mean, just the whole physical aspect. As you know, somebody from the military, as a police, as a doctor, surfer, whatever, they have their own ways. When something doesn't fit, you're looking at somebody and they're trying to give you an image, and that image is not correct. For example, the uniform or the way their dress is not correct, most people will react, will have this little moment of gut check. What they do most of the time is they dismiss it. We have examples of that here in the United States practically, if not every week, every month. Even women dress as cops doing robberies. So the problem is, you know, we need to figure out, not to figure out, but to learn more about body language, that if something is wrong or feels wrong, pay attention, do not dismiss it, and act upon it.
So do you have any specific examples?
Well, listen, one of the most amazing was some months ago, 3-4 months ago, there was this this video in YouTube. This couple of young guys made an undercover video of a police officer harassing because one of them was dressed as a Muslim. Before that, they were having a fight, but dressed, you know, normal for, you know, New York. And then like 20 minutes later, they supposedly go in front of the cop again, but one of them dressed with the robe and the headgear, the whole thing. And supposedly the cop stops the guy and freaks him and calls some names and the whole thing.
When you posted this in the show notes, I looked at it before the show, and I watched the video preparing for this segment. Mm-hmm. And as soon as the cop started doing something, there was that ain't right. That's just not right. And then as soon as the cop opened his mouth, I said, this is fake. This is horribly fake. So I did a Google search and found the article saying that these video bloggers had come clean about it, and it was actually a staged video. But it was immediately apparent to me that that wasn't a cop.
And it was not you alone, because in the comments of the original video, people started saying, you know, well, first thing, what you said, you saw the video and something did not look right when you saw the cop. Okay, and that is perfect. That is the point we're trying to make here. It didn't look right. And at first, you decided, okay, I'm going to look more into it. And the more you look into it, the conclusion, this is BS.
Mm-hmm.
And it was right. The guy that was in a cop, like you said, they had to come up clean. The uniform had a series of failures on the equipment. And he didn't behave. He didn't talk like a cop.
No, cops have a certain way they speak.
Demeanor and they speak. Same as the military. But that is the thing. You know, there was something wrong. Your body, your subconscious detected it. And you acted upon it. And that's the same thing we have to do in everyday life. Even if 99% of the time, just, you know, there's nothing bad happening. But it's that little 1% that will screw us up. On that one, if people are interested in reading more about body language, there is a fantastic book by Joe Navarro. Mr. Navarro is an FBI special agent and supervisor in the area of counterintelligence and behavioral assessment for 25 years. He basically interrogated KGB defectors.
Oh, okay.
They wanted to know if the guy, you know, were telling it with, you know, spies and whatnot, if they were telling the truth or not. And he got very good at it. And it was not because of what they were saying, but what they were not saying with the body. And even sometimes what they were saying in the tremors, they were not. He has the book, the name of the book is What Every Body is Saying. Joe Navarro. We'll leave it on the show notes. It is a great, it's like a really good primer about body language and the detection, not precisely of lies, but weird behavior that may indicate something. It's something I recommend a lot. I recommend a lot to everybody to read because it will help you a lot. And basically, you know, the original thing is if it doesn't look right, pay attention, analyze, and decide.
All right, Miguel. It was good to talk to you. I'll see you again next week.
See you next week.
Get more Miguel Gonzalez daily at gunfreezone.net. Fun with headlines. What do you got?
All right. So this one's kind of interesting. So you know how sometimes, like if you go to CNN, there'll be like a huge front page banner and it's got one headline.
Uh-huh.
And then you click through and it's got a slightly different headline.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So that's what happened here. So the article that I've linked to has the second headline, but the original headline was Birthday Boy Arrested for Shooting Out Window with New Shotgun.
Oh, some idiot gave his 14-year-old a shotgun and he blew out the window, right?
You know, that's what I was thinking. No, not entirely. So the changed headline is Man in Jail for Trying Out New Shotgun Shooting Out Window.
Okay, so he wasn't 14.
Right, so he wasn't 14, right? So, yeah, you know, maybe he was trying to do some dry fire practice and ended up, you know, accidentally loading a shell. So let me go ahead and read you this. A man is in jail after allegedly shooting out an apartment window in South Nashville while trying out his new shotgun. Problem number one, he's in an apartment. The incident happened at Southbrook Apartments on Linbar Drive.
Stop by, say hi.
Late Tuesday night. A woman who lives at the complex told police her window was shot out and she was injured by the broken glass. While the police were talking to the woman, they heard another gunshot.
Two? How stupid is this guy?
I know, right? Police later caught up with 23-year-old suspect. A friend of suspect's told police that he had just gotten a new shotgun for his birthday, which was Tuesday, and was dying to try it out.
Yeah, luckily nobody else died trying it out.
Yeah, no kidding. According to the affidavit, suspect was also slurring his speech and smelled like alcohol.
Okay, yeah, that's not really surprising, is it?
He also vomited several times on the way to booking, the report read. Suspect, a convicted felon, was charged with public intoxication, being a felon in possession of a firearm, and reckless endangerment. Bond was set at $51,000.
Some birthday boy that was.
You know, and who are his friends that got him drunk and gave him a shotgun?
So the operative sentence here, at the very bottom, a convicted felon, not birthday boy, not man in jail for trying out new shotgun, convicted felon, drunk, screwing around, shoots out window, gets arrested. Film at 11.
Yeah. You know, if you accidentally shoot your shotgun, you do it once. You don't reload and then shoot it a second time after the cops have showed up.
I got nothing, man.
Yeah.
Well, Baron finds an article that tells him exactly what he's been telling us all the time. Download sites are serving up crapware.
Tech tips. Tech tips. Tech tips.
You are damaging my calm.
Tech tips with the Baron.
Baron, I was looking for a free virus scanner, and I found one on download.com.
Run away as fast as you possibly can. The problem is nothing in the world is ever free. Seriously, not free. Back in the day, when I say the day, I mean late 90s, early 2000s, you'd actually probably be safe doing that. Basically, what download.com really ended up being was a central hub repository for shareware. You remember what shareware was? Use a program, if you like it, send them some money, and you get to keep the program. If you don't, well, stop using it and stop paying for it.
Oh, that, yeah. Nobody ever paid for it, did they?
And no one ever paid for it. Basically, what's happened is, as time goes on, people are still trying to monetize software they write. They write tools, and, you know, as a software developer myself, I'm of the opinion, screw you, pay me. If you like my software, if you like the work that I do, pay me for it. I'm not doing this just because I absolutely love it. I'm doing it for a living. You think the farmer's just going to give you food because, you know, he likes farming for a living? Well, what's happened, though, is some less than desirable individuals have started trying to monetize things. The way they're going about it is downright scummy. What they're doing is they'll install spyware. FileZilla is actually the best example I've got. So FileZilla is actually technically open source software. You can go and download it from SourceForge. Well, if you go and grab the installer, they wrap the installer with a bunch of spyware crap with it. So you go in and install it, and it tries to put all these hooks into your computer. Would you like to support our software? Install this other tool. It looks almost like you're accepting the end user license agreement. So everyone hits the end user license agreement page, and what do you always click?
Oh, you just go ahead and click the, you know, accept, and you ignore the fact that the box is checked that says install the ask toolbar, which really pisses me off.
Exactly. This is the same type of thing. What's actually really starting to become scary is normally this would only be confined to the Windows environment, but actually I've now started spotting it for OS X. The OS X installer for FileZilla tried to tag me, and I was downright freaking pissed. Linux will still largely be safe because normally things get compiled from source and then distributed as packages that way. But it's still just downright scary, and a couple of different places have actually done research on this. We've included one in the show notes where they take stuff that they download from download.com and then install it into a virtual machine and just see exactly how much crapware they get. And the amount of strain that gets put onto a system and just crap trying to steal credit cards and other personal information is just downright astonishing.
Well, how do we avoid stuff like that?
Remember, nothing is for free, and don't go around downloading stuff for free. And if you do, install it in a virtual machine first. If you're not familiar with what a virtual machine is, you can actually run, say, Windows inside of your Windows desktop. And it's isolated and kept away, so it's fairly safe. And so if you go and install something and it ends up just absolutely hosing your system, well, it hoses the virtual machine as opposed to your regular computer. And then you go, that was bad. The other thing that's very, very important is, and I hate to say this, don't just speed through the dialog boxes while installing. As you sit there and do that, actually read every one because they're trying to make the one that gets the hook into you look like everything else. But that still comes with one serious caveat, and they don't even have to put that page in there. You installing the software, they could just say, well, you consent to us installing the software on your computer. Free software is becoming downright dangerous. My biggest recommendation is go to someplace reputable. SourceForge, while I've mentioned that, you know, there are problems, they are by far the better of the sources to go get it. If it's download.com, run away. Throw up your hands, start screaming, just run away. Run as fast as you can. They are notorious for installing spyware, and they want you to use their special download tool, which has more spyware with it. There's just no getting around it when it comes to those people. SourceForge is largely up to the project in question, and so while FileZilla tried to tag me with that bullcrap, that was actually largely responsible due to the FileZilla project, not SourceForge itself, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah, it does, kind of.
Be very, very careful about who you go to. Choose things that are reputable. Go and start asking friends, especially tech-minded friends, are you familiar with this company? Are you familiar with this program? And if they are, ask them the best place to go get it. If they aren't, they will probably tell you, be very, very careful and look out for these things and install it in a VM first. That way, if it does go south, you just blow away the VM and create a new one and you don't have a problem.
All right, Baron. It was good to talk to you. See you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
Baron still blogs at the-minuteman.org. Quest for Sharpshooter.
Yeah, how's that going?
Last weekend was a really big weekend. I shot an IDPA match, my monthly shoot-to-live IDPA match at the Personal Defense and Handgun Safety Center in South Raleigh. And I came in 31st out of 46, which is more of an improvement than it sounds like. Some of the good shooters were there, as opposed to last month where it was like, you know, just what was left over in the post-Christmas rush.
Right.
And I had somebody tell me, yeah, he watched and I had done a lot better than he was used to seeing. So the practice is paying off. But still, I think the quote of the day goes to me on that one when Ben Berry of Triangle Tactical says, so are you satisfied? I'm like, no, I'm not satisfied. There were 30 people who were better than me.
Good attitude. Good attitude.
And on Sunday, I shot the classifier.
How'd you do?
I shot 165.96 seconds, which is a solid middle marksman in the class that I'm shooting in, which is ESP.
Well, good job.
I didn't do anything ridiculously stupid, but a lot slower than I had hoped. And one of the things that I did is I found somebody who put a list of, this is how fast you should shoot each string in order to make master.
Yeah.
String number one for people at home is 2 shots to the body, 1 shot to the head on target number one. So a standard IDPA target, 2 to the body, 1 to the head. And he says you should be able to do that for master in 2.1 seconds. I did it in 3.53 seconds, 2.98 seconds, and 3.22 seconds on the 3 different targets. 2.10 seconds. Well, those were probably my best, most, you know, my closest to the goal speeds. What I did was, is then I said, all right, well, if I'm going to shoot master, which is going to be a little bit of time coming before that happens, but expert, and then the next one down for expert is sharpshooter. Well, if I multiply the times in master by 1.2, the added up time comes out to be right just a little bit better than the minimum score to get expert. And if you multiply the master times by 1.5, you end up just barely good enough to make sharpshooter. So I figured, well, this makes some pretty good goal times.
Yeah.
And I made a little spreadsheet and said, all right, well, how fast did I shoot? How many points down did I get? What do I need to improve? And string three, I was pretty accurate, but slower than pond water. String three is the stand behind a Bianchi barrier, which is a 6-foot tall, 2-foot wide piece of wood, and shoot at a target at 20 yards. And, you know, you come around it and shoot, you know, 2 to the body, 2 to the next one's body, 2 to the next one's body, and reload. Don't drop the magazine because that's important for some reason. And then go the other side around the barrier and do 2, 2, and 2. Well, I've been practicing that, but I've been practicing that at the equivalent of 10 yards in my house. Well, guess what? Those targets are a lot farther apart than I had put them on my door. They're 2 yards apart from edge to edge. Hmm. So center to center, they're like 10 feet apart. At 20 yards, that's a long ways. I only completely missed the target once out of 30 shots on that stage. I don't know which one I missed, but so I was reasonably accurate, especially for my first time through it. But wow, I need, in order to make the next level up, I really should be at 18 seconds. I shot it in 26.56 seconds. I need to speed that up.
Yeah, the first time I shot an IDPA classifier, it was with a Glock 23, which is the compact 40.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, and I actually, mid-string, stopped, turned around, looked at the RSO, and I said, I swear to God, I've shot a gun before. I was so bad.
Yeah. And see, the other thing that I need to do is, both in the match on Saturday and in the classifier, I rode the slide release and didn't lock back on an empty magazine at least twice in both locations.
Mm.
And yeah, that needs to be fixed. That's just operator error. That doesn't help your time any when you do dumb things like that. Because then you got to figure out what the heck happened and how to fix it. Well, I'm having enough trouble.
Yeah.
I don't need this.
Right.
So now, I really shouldn't be too down on myself. I mean, it's a difficult test. It is a stand and deliver. There's no movement really involved. There's one place where you move from one firing point to another firing point. There are some where you move while you shoot, but there's really only one bit of movement in this thing. So it's stand in one place, deliver the hits, do it fast. And you can't miss fast enough to win. What's worse than a miss?
A slow miss.
Yeah. There's one string. I know it's in stage one where you put two to each target's heads. It's two, two, and two.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was two, two, and two misses into the berm. That hurt.
Ouch.
7.69 seconds, and I missed two. That's an extra 5 seconds on top of that.
Ouch.
So it's a total of 12.69 seconds. And in order to make sharpshooter, I really need to do that in 4.88 seconds and not miss. So I've got a little bit of improvement there.
Yeah, well, you know, you got things to work on now.
Yeah. This is what happens when you give somebody an Excel spreadsheet and a little bit of time. He's like, well, let's identify. Because you know what? You can practice the same stuff. You can say, oh, I'm going to practice everything. That's a dumb way to practice. You know, shoot everything, yes. Practice everything a little bit. But if you just do everything, you do nothing. And if you do nothing, you do just the things you like doing. And I'll get really good at the thing that I thought was fun, which was strings one, two, and three, two to the body, one to the head. And that, like I said, I mean, the fastest I shot that is only 2.2% over what I need to shoot it in order to make sharpshooter. Well, I could get really good at that. And even if I was awesome at it and got it down to master speed, I'm only saving 3 total seconds. I need 30.
Oh, yeah.
So it was interesting. It was certainly eye-opening. I highly recommend it. You should totally do this.
I agree.
You do, but
yes,
all our listeners should. And a lot of the really dumb rules about IDPA, I'm finding out they don't exist anymore. You don't have to do reloads with retaining the magazine on the clock. The only place that you're allowed to do that, they're allowed to force you to reload and hold on to the magazine, is in the classifier.
Oh.
Well, you heard that Kalashnikov is going to start building AKs in the United States. Well, there's a couple of people who predictably had a little bit of, we like to refer to as PSH. Kids, ask your mom. In this week in anti-gun nuttery. So weird, you read the anti-gunners. Who wrote the dumbest anti-gun screed you've seen in the last month?
Oh, Sean, hands down, it is Cliff Schechter.
Oh, Lord, him.
Yep.
See, people actually pay this guy?
Evidently, they must, yeah. Actually, you know who one of the people who pays him is?
Michael Bloomberg. Oh, geez.
Go figure.
So what has he got to say this week?
So he is talking about, actually, I didn't really understand this, but I saw it pop up in a bunch of anti-gun feeds, was talking about now all of a sudden the AK-47 or AK pattern rifle is going to be made in the United States, which was a little head scratching given that I get a bunch of dealer flyers where it always says, oh, 100% American made AK pattern rifle. And yeah, so what's new about this? What actually it is that since Kalashnikov is no longer allowed to export rifles to the United States, the company that's been importing them is now just going to build them here.
Something they probably should have done a long time ago, given the annoyance of the import regulations.
Yeah, probably, but I assume it was probably still cheaper. So he's just completely messing his drawers about this.
All right, so what does he say?
So he says a bunch of stuff. So first quote here is, by we, I mean arms company RWC. And by here, I'm referring to Tullytown, Pennsylvania, where RWC is based. The gun maker conveniently owns the rights to the AK-47 Kalashnikov brand of guns. And in the only high-income country that thinks it's a good idea for any schmo on its streets to port around mass homicide in the palms of his or her hands. I think I missed something there.
I think you read it accurately. I think it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, so that's pretty disjointed. First up, I got to point out, any schmo? That means like any person? I thought the Gun Control Act of 1968 made it perfectly clear that not just anybody can have a gun here. I just think it's weird that these anti-gun people who are always calling for more laws don't seem to be aware of the laws that they're dealing with right now.
Yeah, and even if he means any person who's not otherwise prohibited, what's the problem? Suddenly our rights are only for a privileged few?
No, we just don't have rights in their opinion.
Yeah, in their opinion.
He also talks about, you know, high-income country crap, and that's just a minefield. I mean, we're one of the highest-income countries in the world.
We've covered this.
Yeah.
It's racism pure and simple. Let's compare United States to a bunch of lily-white Western European countries. Ignore the Slavs. Ignore South America. Ignore Africa. Let's only compare to the people who lie about their statistics. Yep. We're totally horrible people. Whatever.
Yep. And of course, also very, very amusing that it's a tool of mass homicide, but except for mass homicides are extremely rare in the United States. Most of our homicides are single or double victim sort of things. So very odd that we have so many, you know, semi-auto rifles out there that, yeah, no, it doesn't really happen.
It's not very often.
So next quote. This is yet more proof, as if we needed it, that even as states like Washington pass ballot initiatives instituting universal background checks, in the Washington on the Potomac, nothing has changed. In that Washington, the military wing of one of our two major political parties, the Grand Old One, is still only too happy to bestow upon those wishing to bring domestic harm the ability to do it with one of the most efficient killing machines ever created. Again, is ignorance of the law. Every gun manufactured by a company eventually needs to be sold to private citizens with a background check. It's only until after that first background check is done can even a private sale be done. And Sean, weren't you in the military?
Yeah, for a little while, about 9 years.
Yeah, did they have a whole bunch of like impressive weaponry?
Yeah, and they wouldn't let me play with most of it.
Did you know that a simple semi-auto AK is one of the most efficient killing machines ever created? All those, you know, warships and tanks and planes and submarines and all that stuff, not nearly as good as, you know, a century-armed sporter.
True, true. I feel like I wasted my time in the military with those mortars and ships. We weren't very efficient.
So going on, here's my personal favorite. Even Mikhail Kalashnikov himself, on his deathbed a year ago at the age of 94, expressed spiritual pain that was unbearable because the weapon he had created. First up, I don't think he actually said that on his deathbed. I think he said that several years earlier in some weird press conference thing. But why should I care about what a commie thinks about what he's designed?
Yeah, so many worse things that the communist governments have done than have an AK. Come on now.
Yeah, exactly. He was a loyal retainer to the Soviet Union, and yet he's concerned about an intermediate weapon. Nah. All right, so closing up. As it was put by Dr. Boyce Watkins in the new documentary Gunland, weapons manufacturers tend to do really well when people are killing each other. If you're bold enough, you might actually call it a key part of their business plan. The gun sales are going way up, and more people are owning guns right now than ever in the history of the country, and yet violent crime is dropping. It just doesn't make any sense.
If you had to kill a bunch of people to be part of the business plan, how are they making any money at all? Murders are way down.
Exactly. It's just smoke and mirrors. Obviously, the expert's not that much of an expert.
True.
So really, this is just a non-story. Gun companies have been building AKs in the U.S. for years. I'm not a big AK guy, so I can't detail the history of it, but they've been going around for a long time. And there are tons of importers that are not Russian. You can get Bulgarian, you can get Polish, you can get Romanian AKs all the time, and they're not affected by any of these import bans. Plus, it's also really easy to build one yourself. There's all sorts of fun blog posts and forum stuff on people building AKs. Did you see that one of the guy that built one out of a shovel?
Yep, saw that one. That was pretty funny.
So in the end, it makes me really happy that people this obnoxious are upset by a company making rifles in the United States.
All right, Weird. It was good to talk to you. See you again next week.
Always fun, Sean.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host at The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com. Stuff that grinds my gears. Cultural relativists, who suddenly discover their inner cultural imperialist when they're talking about, you stupid fat rednecks.
Yeah, this never happens to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know it's a waste of time to tell liberals to try to be consistent, but how can you say all cultures are equally valid and then turn around to say, except for yours, you fat, gun-toting, animal-killing, trailer trash redneck? Last night I was treated to a friend of mine on Facebook losing her ever-loving mind because she had been mistakenly booked into a Safari Club-sponsored expo. She sells stuff for an organic food company. It didn't go well. I gotta say, I really like this girl. She's a real sweetheart. And as different as we are, I still like her a lot. So this isn't a personal thing about her, but a couple of her Facebook friends managed to stomp all over one of those liberal hypocrisies that just sets my teeth on edge. I get it. You don't like killing animals. It makes you uncomfortable. Fine. I'm not going to put a gun in your hand and force you to whack a deer before I let you eat a burger. I'm not going to tell you that if you don't have the guts to kill an animal yourself, you got to spend the rest of your life eating artisanal organic kale. But there's no damn difference between an elk and a steer. They're both alive, and they're both covered in tasty, tasty meat. And if someone gives me a chance to put a bullet in an elk, I'm going to take it. Oh, Sean, we're not talking about feeding your family. We're talking about all those rich white men who spend thousands of dollars going to a foreign country to shoot exotic animals because these men are compensating for their tiny penises. Yeah, sure, I totally believe you. Honest. The reality here is that so many people have grown up in a world where the nearest lion is the Food Lion supermarket. They've never seen meat that didn't either come already cooked or stacked on a foam plate and wrapped in plastic with a price tag on it. Nature is a beast. Nature is red in tooth and claw. We are predators. We kill other things so that we can eat. Killing things is fun for predators. Any predator species that was conflicted about killing his next meal would have died out 10,000 years ago. Not only that, but we're tool users. We don't have sharp teeth, we don't have sharp claws, and we don't have armored skin. We build tools that take their place. At the simple end of things, we sit in tree stands and use a shotgun or a rifle to take a 50-yard shot at an animal we've managed to hide from, if we're lucky. At the most extreme end, we stand on the ground and go head-to-head with a charging rhino or lion. You miss? You better hope the guide doesn't, or you're fish food. But this isn't about whether or not hunting as a sport is a good idea. This is about liberals as cultural imperialists. Liberals are all for moral and cultural relativism. They tell us that we should accept other cultures as they are, and not try to make them more like us. But the minute they see any difference between their liberal pose and our completely different worldview, they lose their minds. Be more like us, they scream. You need to accept our attitudes and lose your own. You like guns and hunting and self-defense, so you're nothing but a trailer trash scum with a tiny penis, and we should be allowed to re-educate you. Well, so much for the tolerant liberal attitudes. We see their real game. Liberals love everything and everyone except us. They can make up their airy fantasies about exotic people who live around the world. They can believe how wonderful everything and everyone else is because they don't actually have to interact with any of these exotic foreigners. But they do have to interact with us, and instead of even pretending to like us and understand us or respect our thoughts, our opinions, or our culture, they reject us, demean us, and turn us into the other. So keep that in mind whenever some liberal tells you how tolerant and accepting he or she is. They aren't. They will tolerate you if you think exactly like they do, or if you're just so different from them that they can patronizingly think of you as just one of their little brown brothers that's just so exotic that they can safely feel a racist superiority to you. If you're white and Western and you don't parrot all the liberal talking points, they will hate you and will show you exactly how intolerant they are. So what's bugging you, Adam? And if you say trophy hunting because there's no sport in shooting from an open-top Land Rover with a scope you can see tire tracks from Mars, I swear to God I'm coming over to your house and put my boot upside your head. And that's a direct quote.
So I'm actually not a hunter. I got no desire to go hunting, but, you know, whatever.
I am technically a hunter in that I had a license and I sat in a tree stand and the deers laughed at me.
Well, there's that. So this one goes back a little bit for me. Sean, have you ever seen the TV show Grimm?
Oh, yeah. Love that show.
Yeah. So
well, at least the first season and a half, I haven't gotten much further than that. I'm starting to wonder about it, though.
So it's midway through season four at this time, and it's really good.
Okay, so I'll stick with it.
Yeah, so the premise is that there's a police officer in Portland who is a descendant of the Brothers Grimm who can see monsters in people. It's kind of a weird, you know, monster of the week thing, but it's done really well.
Go get season one, the first disc off of Netflix, watch it. It's awesome. It's worth it.
Yes. And while you're doing that, keep this in mind. It is very obvious in the first season that the actor who plays the main detective has never touched a gun before in his life. There are several scenes where he's talking to someone and he's got his hand on his pistol. He's just like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, hi, my fiance, how are you doing? And the whole time he's got his fingers around the grip of his gun. Like, dude, stop touching it. Just stop. I actually tweeted the actor and said, please, for the love of God, next season, stop touching it. So season two, it was kind of there. And then now we're in season four and he's just like one of us. He just doesn't even notice it's there. Either that or the armorer said, okay, dude, really stop touching it. And they don't put it on him unless he actually needs it. It's one of the two.
Maybe he's got one of those perceived carry decoys.
Perhaps he does. So I've got a student of mine. I taught her how to shoot a gun a couple of years ago, and she has told me now that when she watches shows, she goes, no, that's not right. You're not supposed to do like that. God, why are you coming around a door with your gun all the way through the door? What is wrong with you? Don't you know somebody's going to steal that from you?
Oh, isn't it so great when they grow up?
It is.
It just brings a tear to your eye. You're like, my student.
The complete opposite of this is when you see somebody who obviously knows and likes guns. Ashton Kutcher, for example. He did a movie a couple of years ago where he was a hitman and had just gotten married and his fiance just found out. I can't remember the name of the movie, but you can see him doing room clears. He's really good with it. So it's like, I was like, wait, back up. Let me watch that again. So anyway, yeah, if you are an actor and you've never touched a gun before, you're obviously not listening to this podcast, but just stop touching it.
Yes. If you have actor friends, take them shooting. Make them go to some tactical training school. Make them watch the movie Sucker Punch and say, if you can't do that, you need more training. Because those are just cute little girls and they can do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's our show for the week. Thanks again to Rob Allen for our music. And thank you for listening to the Gun Blog Variety Cast. We're on Facebook, Gun Blog Variety Cast. Like us on Facebook. And if you listen to us via iTunes, go to iTunes and leave us a review. I think we've got one total. We can do better than that.
Surely.
Constructive criticism can be sent to Sean at SeanSorrentino.com and hate mail to WizardPC@GunsCarsTech.com. Show notes can be found at GunBlogVarietyCast.com/episode 24. We'll be right back.